Welcome, Lloyd.
Hi, Alex. How are you going?
I'm very well, thank you. Today we are going to discuss coronavirus, possibly the most discussed topic at the moment and over the past few months.
It is indeed, and I think, no one was expecting what we've seen. The world certainly changed, and certainly a pandemic that no one was really expecting at all earlier in the year. And I think it's a good opportunity now to just discuss how that has affected the property markets at this stage, particularly with the changes to auctions and to open houses, which are now back to normal, but also going forward, looking at the markets around the country. And not just this year, but also looking at those long-term perspectives and where we see the markets in 5-10 years' time and so on.
I suppose from a property perspective, sort of putting the social aspects of this pandemic to the side, you know, looking back, we saw in March, April, the biggest changes in the market. I mean, we saw open homes and auctions be virtually shut down overnight as part of all the new social distancing restrictions. That was probably where we saw the most confidence come out of the market overnight. I know in my experience, it dramatically shifted the buyer's perception and seller's perception of what they thought was going to happen. I think a lot of people very quickly were expecting the worst. Throughout our series of Positively Geared, we always touch on strategy being the cornerstone of building a property portfolio or investing in general. It's just a reminder to everybody that everything that we do is designed over a longer period of time, and it's not necessarily about what the market's going to do tomorrow or next month.
Yeah, that's right, Alex. And I think it's really important that people are not too concerned about what's happening now, what's happening in 6 months' time. People get very worried, you know, should I be buying now? Should I be selling now? And all that kind of stuff. But really, as an investor, you really should be looking at your long-term goals, as I've always talked about. Where do you want to be in 5-10 years' time? And making sure that your goals are aligning with that, because as history dictates, the markets will recover and will keep moving forward, and property is a good long-term investment. And I think people have been a little bit concerned because we've seen how volatile the stock markets have been and superannuation and everything. But I think today we can just shed some light on how we perceive the markets moving forward.
So Lloyd, I think to put the first myth to sleep, you know, there's been a lot of sensationalism in the media lately about, you know, the Australian housing market going to crash, going to possibly see a 50% reduction in 6 months' time. What are the challenges you're facing at the moment with your clientele base as a result of some of that media and just reinstilling confidence in property with them?
Well, I think that's the exact challenges, all the hype around the media, and people are being concerned about that because people always listen to that and sort of think, oh, that's going to happen, because people love a good bad story from that perspective. But I really think that people need to put things in perspective. I think that the government has done a tremendous job at the moment containing the coronavirus around the country. But also, I think we're getting back to business quicker than we probably originally thought we were. So there's a few things that the government has in place that I think are really going to help. And one of those are government stimulus packages. The JobKeeper, for example, which is actually legislated for 6 months, so up until September. We're actually now starting to see some normality now. And even with businesses coming back now, they're still entitled for JobKeeper up until September. So I think that's a good thing. And what that means is that, you know, for the economy to move forward, people need to spend. And that money is coming back into the economy, and people will be able to spend that. Businesses would be up and running again. That coupled with the low interest rates that we are continuing to see, I think is helping helping keep the house prices up. And what we're also seeing is that there's a shortage of supply on the market in terms of property, which we'll touch on later. But that's I guess coupled with the fact that there are still buyers in the market, and that is actually keeping our house prices up quite firmly as well. So we're not going to see those huge crashes. I think one of the things that we need to have in place to see massive house price crashes would be massive rising unemployment along with huge interest rate rises. Now, potentially we are seeing some increases in unemployment. But I think that's going to be curved a bit because of all the stimulus packages, but we're not going to see interest rates go anywhere at the moment. So I think that that's going to actually keep the economy and the house prices fairly steady at the moment.
The other thing too is that as a country, I think Australia has a really good financial backing in the sense that, you know, we've got government bodies like APRA, which we saw during the Royal Commission, have sort of stepped in and done what they've needed to do to make sure that they regulate things and ensure that we don't go too far one way or the other. And I feel that, you know, the government's doing the best job they can now to sort of follow that same theme.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think APRA has done a fantastic job in the past, as you say. And I think the that they're still continuing that theme. And I do think that with the banks helping out with sort of putting mortgages and stuff on hold at the moment is certainly assisting people. Although there's a little bit of talk around the fact that once that sort of ceases and people have to start paying the mortgages again, there may be a few more issues with repossessions and things. I don't see that to be such an issue in most areas because as long as sort of people are got their jobs and businesses are back. But I think it's been handled quite well by the government and also by the state governments as well.
And an interesting statistic which sort of goes against what the media keeps sort of harping on about at the moment is, you know, in March and April, Sydney property prices actually saw very small incremental gains.
Well, that's correct, Alex. So in March, the Sydney property market actually increased by 0.1%. And in April, there was a 0.5% increase. Now, I guess that was quite early in the coronavirus, and you're not going to see true effects of the pandemic until a little bit later. But there certainly wasn't dramatic falls as was predicted. In May, there's about a 0.5% fall. So again, only very minor. So nothing dramatic has come. And although we are sort of into a situation where we're sort of heading into a recession, we're not really seeing these major falls. And I don't think we're going to see these big 30, 40, 50% falls that that the economists or the media would have us believe.
In my daily business, Lloyd, I'm seeing a lot of buyers out there at the moment. There's a cross-section of buyers in the market. So there are buyers that obviously need to purchase. They're ones that are driven purely by, they've possibly had another child. They've sold already, whether it was pre or during COVID. You know, they're obligated to get back into the market. Then there's the other set of buyers who are sort of, they've got the money in the bank. They've done the pre-approvals, but they're sort of thinking, okay, well, we're just going to wait this out. We're going to ride this out. In your experience, it's not necessarily a question of when to buy, but where. What does that look like if you're an investor today? Do you see opportunity in this market?
Alex, there definitely are opportunities. And I always do say that it's not a matter of whether we should be buying now. It's a matter of where we should be buying. Because a lot of people say, is now the right time to buy and all that kind of stuff. But really, I've always said, and I still maintain that, it is always the right time to buy if you've got your finances in order, if you've got stable income and everything like that. But it's really a matter of where, and you need to watch what the markets are doing. There are probably some markets that you need to be a little bit careful of. So I'd advise people to be a little bit careful of areas that may be lower socio-demographic where you might be able to get a good bargain and things like that. But those good bargains could potentially be in areas where there's a higher chance of mortgagee repossessions and things like that. So, and in this current climate, I'd be a little bit careful of just chasing bargains for that. So really looking at that aspect and also looking at sort of where the markets are sort of sitting in terms of the property cycles at the moment, and certainly looking outside your backyard. And quite often it's not necessarily just the capital cities. We can see some strong growth in regional areas at the moment outside the capitals. Getting back to the two things you mentioned there, if you're buying and selling in the same market, like if you're like a home buyer and you've got a growing family, that's kind of okay. You're going to sell a property and then you're going to buy a property in the same market. So you're probably going to be, in the same situation. You're going to sell probably at a less of a price than you normally would, but you'd be buying maybe a bit of a bargain. It's the investors who are holding off buying now, and then hoping they'll get a better deal later on, that they often miss the boat. It's really hard, in fact, almost impossible, to time the bottom of the market. And that's what people are tending to do. They're kind of thinking, oh, well, if I wait 6 months, then the house prices are going to fall by 40%. And I've had some clients who have sort of said that to me. They say, I'm not going to buy now because house prices are going to fall by 40% and I'll buy in 6 months' time. That historically has never really happened. So there's nothing really to indicate that's going to happen now just because we're in a pandemic that we haven't experienced before. And what's important to also note is that you can never really predict when the bottom of the market is. Because once we've seen the bottom of the market, we're already out of it and we're on the other side. So you really do need to be very careful of that. And I always say that it's time in the market, not timing the market. That is very important from that perspective.
Very good point, Lloyd. And, you know, back once again, just bringing it back to strategy, which we always harp on about, when you've got that end goal in mind and you sort of reverse engineer the whole process, it just removes a lot of the white noise, doesn't it? So you're not too concerned what the market's going to do tomorrow or next month, pandemic or not, because the reality is markets always change. They change daily.
Absolutely, Alex. And that's the thing. There is a lot of noise around at the moment. And you really, if you have that strategy in place and you have those goals, like where you want to be in 10, 15 years' time, then you shouldn't be worried about what's happening in 6 months' time and whether you should be selling or buying a property, whether it's going to go down in value or whether, you know, what's going to happen in 3 months' time. Because in 10 years' time, you know, historically, property has proven to be such a good investment and it still is. So just look at where you'll be in 10 years' time and then look at that that strategy you got and how you plan to build that portfolio. It's certainly not a matter of just looking at, you know, 3 months down the track, because that's very very short-sighted. And I think that part of that strategy that you can mitigate against risk in the current market are things like maybe having properties with higher yield, for example, going for dual income properties, going for properties where you can add some value, which is something that I always talk about, something that I've referred to in my book Positively Geared. Because if you can add some value through a subdivision, which we're doing for a lot of clients at the moment, or we're doing some renovation and things like that, then you're actually adding value and you're mitigating against risk of the market falling. Because if the market does fall a bit, then you've actually still added value to your own property. So you're actually mitigating against that risk. But still, over the long term, you'll be able to get that capital growth on your property as well as mitigating against the short-term market falls.
I think a good learning is, or a reminder, you know, just touching on everything you've said, Lloyd, is that it's really important as a property investor to get back to basics. Throughout this whole pandemic, we've just touched on it, there's been so much commentary. We've sort of, you know, tried to give people confidence back and just remind them, okay, well, property is a medium to long-term investment class, which it is. But if we just once again remind people that, you know, looking at the strategies, looking at all the ways in your book you've suggested and proven, by the way, in your own past experience, and you continue to do it today with your clientele base, that stuff will get you through any situation.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. And it really comes down to education. And I always say to people that the first thing you need to do is learn, is educate. So quite often people come to me and they want to sort of build a property portfolio and they kind of want to know what the next step is. But the first step is really to get educated, to actually understand the fundamentals properly and to understand how buying property is actually going to help you to achieve your goals and how you can mitigate against risk. Because there's always going to be something that happens and something that can be a deterrent, whether that's a pandemic, whether that's potential interest rate rises, whether the whether we're going into a recession or whether the government changes after an election. There's all sorts of things that can turn you off investing if you let it. But you really need to have those goals in place, and you want to be part of the 5% of the population that achieve your goals. You don't want to be the 95% that follow the crowd and actually don't get to where you want to get because you're too scared to take action. So the first thing you need to do is have a goal and get educated on how you can actually get to those goals. And then you're not going to be so worried about the steps along the way and the types of properties and what's going to actually happen in the markets along the way, because you actually are going to understand that and you'll end up enjoying the journey much more.
I think clarity is a really key word. Having clarity around what exactly you want. That's something I really took away from your book, Positively Geared. you got to have the sort of the end goal in mind. And if you're not clear about what you want in life, because once again, reminding people that property investing is obviously a great way to produce wealth. But really, it's not just about money in the bank. It's about building a life that you want to live, right?
That's absolutely right. And it's certainly not just about money in the bank. And you know, wealth and money and your goals and lifestyle means different things to different people. So, you know, everyone's got their own goals there. So you really need to understand what it is you're trying to achieve there, and then having an understanding of how you're going to get there. So whether you're wanting to set your family up for the future, whether you want to buy a dream house, whether you want to be able to just put your kids through school, whether you just want to be able to go on holidays without worrying about where the money's going to come from. If you can set yourself up through property and have an understanding of how that's going to get there, and then have a clear roadmap. What is missing a lot of the time with people is that roadmap on how to get there. I think people generally understand, yes, you can buy X amount of properties over X amount of years, and then sell half of them and pay off all your debt, and then you'll be living happily ever after and all that. But it's actually having that roadmap, which is what I try to help people with, is actually understanding how one property can get you in to the next property, how they fit into your portfolio, and then how that property will get you into your next property, and how that would ultimately allow you to achieve your goals. When you have that, if you keep yourself accountable to your goals or have someone keeping you accountable towards your long-term goals, then what's happening in the short term is quite irrelevant, because you're not going to worry about that. And I certainly don't worry about things, you know, short term, because there's always going to be little hurdles along the way, but you're looking long term, you know, you'll be much happier as a result.
Lloyd, I want to talk about, it's been a hotly discussed topic over the past couple of weeks, and it's, I suppose, you know, a cause and effect of coronavirus. It is specific to New South Wales. It's the talk around possibly stamp duty being reformed. I'm finding in my personal experience, there's a lot of clients at the moment that are particularly looking to either go to market, that are possibly waiting to see what happens there. What are your views around that? It's no secret that stamp duty is the biggest source of revenue for the New South Wales state government. What do you see happening there, and how do you feel that might impact the property market?
Look, I actually think that I think the government's definitely considering that at the moment, and I actually think that would actually be a good thing, because it is a deterrent to be paying stamp duty. Particularly, you know, the more expensive property you get, the higher the amount of stamp duty you're paying. And that, so you've spent, you know, a long time saving up a 10 or 20% deposit, and suddenly, depending on the price of your property, you might have to pay an extra $20,000 or $30,000 or more in stamp duty. That can be a deterrent and make things difficult for people. So I actually think that would be a good thing if that was brought into legislation. I think one of the things I'm seeing at the moment is people sort of wondering, you know, when that's going to happen, and should I hold off buying until that comes in, and then maybe people sort of stop buying and then decide they're just going to buy after that. The stamp duty is sort of deleted and all that kind of stuff. But again, I think that's people not really focusing on their long term goals there. I think from a home buyer perspective, could probably go that way and just think, oh yeah, that'll save me a fair bit for my next home. From an investment perspective, again, that's just going to hurt your goals, because there's no date fixed for this or anything yet. It's not even definite. So just sort of sitting around thinking, oh, I won't buy until I know where that comes in, it's not really going to help you very much. So you got to keep those long-term goals in mind, and realize that it's sort of part of your investment there, and not get too worried about that over the long term in terms of buying property. And of course, when you're buying an investment property, then generally you might be buying something that's a little bit cheaper than your own home, so the stamp duty be less. There's other things that you can do to save on stamp duty when you're investing, and one of those, of course, is developing. So if you buy a block of vacant land, then you're only paying stamp duty on the land, and then you build on it. So you build a house or a duplex on it, and you're not actually paying stamp duty on that duplex. So those are the sort of strategies that I'd be doing right at the moment to avoid paying too much stamp duty at the moment anyway. So if you're just buying a cheap block of land and you're paying $5,000 stamp duty on it, then that's neither here or there. So I wouldn't let that stop you from continuing to invest in the current markets.
Some great commentary there, Lloyd. And just to remind the listeners, I think the real takeaway points there are, you know, it's always about, it's back, once again, it's back to strategy. It's about your long-term goals. We don't believe that it's necessarily a good idea to sit out on the fence and wait to see what happens, because once again, there's no guarantee that they'll even reform it. So if you are looking to build wealth, if you're looking to invest, now's as good a time as any. Obviously, doing your due diligence and being smart about where you put your money. It's never a good idea to wait 12 to 24 months or beyond, because in that time too, property prices possibly could pick up again. You know, there's so many moving parts to investing, so it's never a good idea just to wait.
I think that's right, Alex. And that's the thing. There are so many moving parts to investing. And I really think you can't just sort of sit around thinking that, because depending on who you listen to and who you want to listen to, there will be people that say, oh, prices are going to fall next year, or prices are not going to recover for 5 years. But that's not really going to help you when you're trying to build your wealth and achieve your goals, because you've got a 10-year time frame in place, but you're not going to invest for 5 years because you want to see what the market does. That's just not going to help you. And that's just why I really want to reinforce to people that you really need to have those goals in place and talk to a mentor or a buyer's agent about your goals, and then get some assistance. Get a roadmap drawn up, and then look at, you know, what properties you can buy to help you get to those. Because at the end of the day, property is just a vehicle to create wealth. But without that vehicle, you're not going to create that wealth. And whether you're using property, whether you're using shares, whatever, you need to be out there. You need to be investing. Stop worrying so much about, you know, the commentary in the market, and just keep those goals in mind, which is something that I always look at. But, I remember when I first started investing, first few years, I didn't have a strategy in place, which I've openly talked about. But when I did actually set my goals and set a strategy, it completely changed things for me. And I haven't looked back since then. I've been very focused on everything that I wanted to do, whether that's investing, whether that's growing my business, as property professionals, whatever it is. I've been very focused because I've had a goal in place. And I wasn't like that when I first started. But when I really did focus myself, then I haven't looked back since. And I think that's really important for people to take away and think about that.
What are you seeing in the market today, Lloyd, now that we're probably on the way out of at least social distancing and a lot of the restrictions which essentially shut down a lot of businesses?
It's interesting, Alex, because I think we are definitely getting through to the other side of coronavirus. I don't think we're getting away from social distancing just yet. There's still a lot of that, which is quite difficult in some areas to actually be able to social distance. What I actually am seeing certainly is everything being back to, I guess, close to normal, or maybe a new normal, much sooner than was first predicted. Because when I guess we were first warned about this in sort of late February, March, and we're sort of just told it'd be at least 6 months, economy is going to go into hibernation, and then people will hopefully be back into business at the end of the year, maybe, or into next year. But we are looking like things are really turning to normal much quicker. And as I mentioned a little earlier, the fact that there's still going to be stimulus packages such as JobKeeper in place, I think will actually help businesses and help the economy. I think the government still needs to look at other ways to stimulate the economy, because we are looking at that, going into a recession there and everything like that. Yeah, that's quite important, try to keep the economy moving forward from that perspective. But I do think that we're actually going to see, from a property perspective, we're probably going to see the prices sort of stabilize this year, but certainly not have large falls. There will be some falls in some markets, but not anything major. And I think we'll be starting to see some house price growth into next year. So I think there's some positiveness around that perspective as well.
Where are the places to avoid at the moment? And not on a suburb basis. However, if you were out there today, what areas would you avoid? What areas would you recommend looking at?
I think the areas that I'd probably look at avoiding, which is probably something that I've often talked about anyway, is areas that are reliant on the tourism sector. And we've seen what the coronavirus has unfortunately done to tourism. And of course, we all love going to tourist places and things. They don't always make the best areas to invest. I've often talked about the fact that the Gold Coast, for example, is not an area that I invest in. Lovely area, everything like that. But I wouldn't be going to places like that are going to be so volatile and reliant on a sector that hasn't done too well in this sort of climate. And areas that are not driven by, you know, several industries. I think you do need to have a lot of sectors driving an economy. And I'm talking on a fairly broad basis here, because obviously investing in Sydney and Melbourne is always going to be good in many suburbs, but you can invest in regional areas that are still driven by, you know, universities and hospitals and new shopping centres and have got airports and things like that. Those are good areas to invest in as well. But like I've often said, don't just invest in an area that's just, you know, reliant on the resources sector and things like that. I also think that, you know, probably trying to avoid areas that are lower socioeconomic at the moment in terms of an investor would be good, because although you might be able to get sort of more bargains there over your long-term goals, that may not be so sufficient in terms of the growth that you might get in that property. And if you look at areas where perhaps on average in the households, you've got actually got, you know, two incomes in the households on average, and there are you know, ways to look up those statistics, which I think would be beneficial to you rather than just relying on one household income.
Lloyd, we've seen over the past couple of years low stock really supporting prices, at least in a lot of the Sydney metro markets. Through coronavirus, we've seen stock levels further decline, which we believe in part has helped keep the market relatively stable. One of the great services that you offer being a buyer's agent is that you do have the reach and ability to get your clients in front of properties which aren't on the market. And that being a main trend at the moment, a lot of sellers gravitating towards the off-market sale just because it takes a lot of pressure off them to feel, you know, overly committed to going to market and then being put in a position where they're going to be out of the market. What are you finding at the moment are some of the trends in the market?
Yeah, Alex, I think one of the main things that we found is that when this pandemic first happened, is that we had more agents than ever calling us to try to sell their properties through us, you know, without listing them at all. And that was because the vendors basically didn't want to list and didn't want to have anyone sort of walking through their homes. They just wanted to have sort of one, you know, one serious buyer rather than even, you know, private inspections, because obviously they're worried about, you know, having someone, you know, walk through, they might have the virus and things like that. So that was a definite trend. And I think that that trend continues because, you know, we've formed, you know, a lot more relationships with a lot more agents in different suburbs, which is can only benefit our clients, obviously. So there are, you know, a lot of, there is a lot of properties that are changing hands that are not listed. From being on the Northern Beaches where we are at the moment, I mean, you've seen a fair bit of that yourself, I think.
Absolutely. Lloyd, over the past 2 months, what has definitely been part of the cause and effect of coronavirus is there are a lot of tenants at the moment that are either unable to pay their rent, have asked for rent reductions, and are possibly not committing to, you know, fixed-term leases. As a property investor and a lot of people listening today that might be in the position where they've got tenants that need rent reductions, I know I've had a lot of phone calls from clientele base that we also manage their properties once we've sold them to them. And there's a lot of fear being driven at the moment. What do you suggest that people do in this situation just so that they stay centered?
Yeah, I think there's some good points there, Alex. I think one of the things that are very important, firstly, is that if tenants are generally struggling to pay rent, then I think we do need, as landlords, to be sensitive towards that. I know I've had a couple of my tenants who have approached me for that reason. However, it's also important that people aren't sort of playing the system, which is what we've seen as well. So we want to make sure that people aren't just asking for a rent reduction simply because it's COVID-19. And that, unfortunately, has been happening a little bit. So one of the strategies I've been using, and this is where I've actually caught out some of my tenants, and that is, you know, finding out, you know, actually have they really had a reduction in income? So getting proof of that. And then also asking if they've got any, you know, savings in the bank. So, you know, asking to see maybe a bank statement with savings to see if they've actually got any money left over to, you know, to pay some extra rent. To see perhaps if they've got, you know, a Foxtel subscription or Netflix or something like that, or even a car loan. So I had, for example, one of my tenants who had all of the above, had a lot of money in the bank, had a car loan, had lots of subscriptions, and was actually spending a lot of money on Uber Eats, you know, like every night, but they didn't want to pay rent. Now, these particular tenants actually did have a reduction in income. However, they also had enough money and other areas where they could have actually reduced their spending in other areas to cover their loss of income to so they could pay their rent. So what actually happened there is that those tenants are actually still paying me their full rent because, you know, it's not good enough for tenants just to decide not to pay rent just for the sake of it. So you do need to do a little bit of digging around. So I think that's very important. But if you do have tenants that are genuinely struggling there, then yeah, coming to some kind of agreement with them, I think, can help. And if you're struggling as a landlord, then the banks are more than happy to help out at this stage as well, where you might be able to put some mortgages on hold or at least reduce your mortgage payments for a little bit during this period so that you shouldn't be in too much trouble either. Moving forward, part of the strategy of building your portfolio is that you build up a strong portfolio that can mitigate against any of these risks happening. So, for example, my portfolio is positively geared, and it's actually more than that. It's not just positively geared, but it's cash flow positive. So it's cash flow positive before tax. And I've also got buffers in place. So if anything like this does happen, I'm not concerned about that. Now, I'm not expecting everybody to sort of be in that situation, but if you plan long enough and you spend, you know, enough time and commitment building things up over the years, then you can get to that situation where you actually can be quite comfortable that you're not going to be worried about any possible vacancies in your properties or tenants who can't pay rent and things like that. So that's what I would like to suggest to people moving forward, that if they're not in that position now, again, have a goal, plan some strategies, because we will get pandemics again in the future. There will be issues in the future, but we want to be in a position, everyone should be in a position where if they lose their job or if they lose their tenants in their property, it doesn't actually affect their own income or their own, you know, way of life, because they've got other sources of income coming in. And that's the message I would like to get out there for people.
Really good point, Lloyd. The other thing too is just touching on, you know, checking and making sure that your tenants genuinely do need that support is also with JobKeeper and JobSeeker, you know, are they receiving that benefit?
Absolutely, yeah, that's a very good one as well, Alex.
Lloyd, in terms of what you just touched on with, your portfolio is quite stable at the moment, and that's obviously something that's taken you the best part of, 20 years to build. For people that are a bit more in the risk zone at the moment, is there anything that you can draw on from your past experience when you were early into your investing career where you mentioned buffer before? How can people create buffer, you know, in what's a really difficult time?
In terms of now and it being a difficult time, certainly, it's not necessarily the right time for everyone to be investing at the moment. People may not have, enough income and things at the moment, but they can still be planning for the future and things like that. Whenever you're buying property, you really need to have more than just the costs involved. So obviously, you need to have more than just your deposit. So if you're paying a 10 or 20% deposit, make sure you've got that, but then you also need to be able to cover your stamp duty and your legal costs and so on. But then you should be able to have enough of a buffer in place that can cover you for at least 3 months of rent if there's vacancies in your property. As time goes by, you want to be able to extend that. So 6 months, even 12 months. So an ideal situation would be if you had enough money in the bank for each property that can cover that property for a year if there's vacancy. Now, if you're buying in really good areas, then you should never have that problem because the vacancy rates will always be low. But the buffer can also go towards any repairs that pop up on your property as well. But, you know, if you do have you are in the middle of a pandemic and suddenly you do have a vacancy and it's really hard to get tenants or something at this time, then having that buffer can actually really help that. So in terms of saving that buffer, it's the same thing. Just keep saving and making sure that you're watching where your money goes and trying to put money away, where possible. And what you can also do with your properties is when you have a bit of equity in them, refinance the equity. Quite often you're refinancing the equity to help you buy another property, but you don't need to use all that equity to buy another property. You can always put $5,000 equity away into an offset account, and that can be your buffer. And then as time goes by, you can add to that, maybe it becomes 10 grand buffer and so on. So the little strategies like that, and they're buffers that you generally don't touch. So as well as the savings you might have elsewhere or the money you're paying down on your principal place of residence, if you've got these other offset accounts with just a small amount in each of them, that's also been an offset account. It's actually paying down the interest on those investment properties, but it's also a buffer for you if you get into strife. And across a multiple property portfolio, you'll end up being in a very comfortable position and you're not going to stress about money. And that's what you really want to do. Number one thing is the sleep at night factor. So you want to be able to sleep well at night, knowing that you're in a financially comfortable situation and have a good, strong portfolio that's actually looking after you and working for you. And you're not going to be worrying about, you know, whether your tenants move out and whether I'm going to be able to pay my mortgage and things like that. And it's the same as when you've got a job. And if you lose your job, like a lot of people unfortunately have at this time, if you've got those sort of savings that you can rely on, then you shouldn't be too worried about losing your job, because you might be on JobKeeper and stuff. But if you've got savings in your account or in one of your offset accounts, then you can actually use that to help you during difficult times as well.
It's very much, once again, about just building the right framework to invest in. I know in your book you mentioned that the beauty of investing in property is that really you only need to save a deposit once.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and that's the thing, Alex. So if you've got your deposit for your first property, you buy the right sort of property, it goes up in value, maybe even do some stuff to manufacture equity on it. But once you refinance that, you use that equity to go and buy your next property. And as I said a minute ago, some of that equity can actually be used as a buffer for that first property as well. So it's just growing your equity in your properties.
I think the silver lining, Lloyd, in this pandemic is that we learn as humans a lot more from difficult times than when things are going well, right? And for some, this might be a good opportunity to actually take a step back, review your portfolio, review where you were planning to invest in, almost taking a pulse check on everything. And possibly this will help weed out bad investment choices you've made, or just give you more clarity around where you should be investing in.
True, Alex. And I'd go a step further. I think it's actually should give you more clarity around things in general, because it has been unfortunate with a lot of people that have lost their jobs, and a lot of people won't. They're a little bit out of the box, and they won't eligible for JobKeeper and things like that. But what I have seen, unfortunately, are people that lost their source of income, and then they didn't have enough savings to be able to pay more than a few weeks of rent and things like that. I think now is a great time for people to start planning for the future and think, how can I never be in this position again? Next time there's a pandemic around, I don't want to be worried about money. And that's what's really important. That's a good takeaway, because, if we get another pandemic in 10 years' time, you don't want to be in the same position now that you're working sort of paycheck to paycheck, you lose your job and then you've got nothing to fall back on. So I advise people to really strategize, think about your goals and think about how you can actually set up a plan, because it's very possible to actually mitigate against those risks and have multiple sources of income. Obviously the best way to do things is essentially have more income sources than just your paid job. So you want to have some passive income coming from some investments, and now's a great time to actually be thinking about how you can actually set that up in the future. And as I've said before, just get some education about it, work out how you can put those plans in place.
Very good advice, Lloyd. What I think we're also keeping a keen eye on is, and this is, I guess, more of a social impact of coronavirus, is, but what ties into, the property market and investing is that, with a lot of people now working from home, possibly we're going to see a quicker move towards decentralization, meaning that people don't necessarily need to be living 15 minutes from Sydney or Melbourne CBD, as an example. And what effects that going to have on, it could possibly improve values in other markets.
A lot of companies are now looking at probably keeping their staff working from home. Maybe the markets that are now 50, 60 Ks from the city might become more valuable, because people might move out there for lifestyle choices, given the fact that they don't actually have to be working in the city now or being close to that place of work. So as you said, those areas have been decentralized. So we're going to see some other markets coming to the fore, I think, into the future. And I think that's worthwhile, when strategizing and looking at areas to invest, you know, sort of keeping that in mind as well. And those sort of areas obviously are going to take quite a while to grow. So I wouldn't be looking at it just on that. But that can be one of the things that we look at, along with what else is actually happening in the areas. But if people are going to be, you know, sort of working from home and all that kind of stuff, then it's likely that the government will then start to invest more in infrastructure in those areas, because there's going to be more housing and stuff built in those outer suburbs, which are generally more affordable for people to, you know, to live in. So, you know, if there are infrastructure, there's Bunnings, there's McDonald's, there's all those sort of things that are going up in those areas, then that could be a good sign that there's some stuff happening there. So as an investor, you can take note of that and think, yeah, I might keep note of that as an area that we can look at for the future.
How important is it, Lloyd, to work with a buyer's agent at the moment?
Alex, I think at the moment it's very important to work with a buyer's agent, because you definitely get some good off-market opportunities, but also getting some advice on what the right opportunities are for you at the moment. So, you know, the best opportunities for you aren't necessarily only off-market properties, but a buyer's agent really needs to be able to get you the best property at the best price, or certainly the right property at the right price. You know, getting that advice, and because, you know, we're in that sort of market where we're a little bit unsure of what might be happening and what might be happening going forward, getting some advice from someone who's a professional in the area that you're wanting to buy in, and then that'll sort of ensure that you're not overpaying. Using a buyer's agent, that can sort of help strategize to understand your goals, and maybe understands more than just one particular market, so that whatever your goals are, they can match up your goals with properties in those particular markets.
We hope our listeners today, Lloyd, have taken away some really good points. And I think just the underlying theme is obviously to identify some of the trends that and cause and effect of coronavirus, which we've done. But it's also ultimately just to give people confidence in their strategy, having a good strategy, being clear about what's important to them. We mentioned just before that, you know, coronavirus has probably not only from an investing perspective, but socially allowed people to get more clarity around what's important to them.
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. And I think the thing is, I just want people to be thinking more long term. So don't be too stressed about what coronavirus is doing and to the markets and stuff. And things aren't going to be as bad as what the media would have us believe and things like that. So just think long term. And hopefully people have got a little bit of confidence from listening to us today to be able to strategize and look at their long term goals.
And to close off, Lloyd, what would you say to the person down at the coffee shop you'll see later today, or the client that you've spoken to last week that is waiting for the market to crash?
Well, the person down at the coffee shop, I'd probably say a latte with two sugars. if you're in a position to buy, then, you know, you should really be looking at buying now. Don't wait for the market to crash, and don't try to time the market. Don't think, oh, in 6 months' time, the market's going to hit the bottom. Those people who sit on the sidelines, they really do miss out. Rarely does anyone who sits on the sideline actually become a successful investor. And that's what people need to realize, is that 95% of people sort of follow each other, sort of like sheep, and they get the same results as each other. So you want to be one of those 5% of people who actually get out there, make a difference, and achieve your own goals. So just think about that every time you're thinking about whether I should be, or investing, or whether I should wait a little bit longer. So just have a think about your goals, and I advise people to get out there and have a go.
Thanks so much for your time today.
Cheers. Thanks, Alex.